everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and welcome to another episode of Fired Up, your show for conservative talk. So let's get down to it. Well, actually, before we do that, let's talk about a problem America has. It is a Nazi problem. So what are we going to do about it? I mean, look at all these Nazis, these anti-Americans. I tell you, we must do something about this. In fact, this Nazi problem goes all the way back. It's beyond Nazism. It goes all the way back to slavery, the lynchings, to segregations, to Jim Crow laws. Look at them. Bernie Sanders. I forget that guy's name, Colbert or something. Kamala. You know, she has her slavery goes back to her Jamaican roots. Then we got Obama himself. And we got Pocahontas and even Hillary. Nazis. What are we going to do about these people? I tell you. So obviously, they're not Nazis, and neither is Elon Musk, who the left just keeps trying to say is a Nazi when all he did was give love from the heart. In fact, it's gotten so bad in trying to destroy him, they even now have it on his Wikipedia page. I bet you I know who's going to be sued first if Section 230 ever gets removed. In fact, while she's not listed here, there is a Nazi who dumped her Tesla to support a company that supported Hitler and helped him build one of the most efficient cars in history, Volkswagen. That's right. AOC went out to support her Nazi buddy, Volkswagen Corporation. At what point does the media show honesty and transparency and do their job to report versus being an ideological spigot for the left? I don't know. But this nonsense has to stop. So tonight, sit back and enjoy a show that is nothing but a lot of love from the heart. And let's welcome our panel. All righty. So we have with us tonight Mr. Jamie Miller and Miss Annette Ross. And real quick, I don't know what happened to our producer there, Big John. He kind of left y'all hanging out there. Miss Annette, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, thank you.
And you bring out the Miss Nancy Reagan with that beautiful red blouse there. And then we have Mr. Jamie Miller, GOP strategist from Florida, and he's high on the cloud right now, and I'm not going to say what the news is, but he got some phenomenal news this week, and we're all happy for him. So how has your week been going? And Jamie told me just the other day he was happy he didn't go to the inauguration. Jamie, you want to talk about that for a few seconds? Why didn't you go?
I am sitting in my house in Sarasota, Florida with three shirts on and I'm about to grab a jacket. So, you know, it is, we've had a week worth of freezing cold weather. It's gotten down to 46 every day, highs of 52. It's unbearable. And so I look at Washington DC and, 18 degrees, wind chill of zero or whatever it was. You know, you have to walk everywhere and it's not for this hashtag Florida man.
Oh, I get that. I lived in Florida. It was Jacksonville. Beautiful. Florida, so beautiful. If I have to leave California, I will head towards Florida. My wife and I, we kind of semi-voided it on. I kind of said, we're going to Florida if we move. You'll like
it. We would welcome you with open arms.
I'd really love it. I've been to Key West. Key West is beautiful, probably a little too pricey. I got in trouble with the XO. I was young and single and took the XO's girl. As an enlisted man, you don't do that. And he actually called me to his office and we had a few words about rank and hierarchy and what you do and don't do to embarrass the big guys. But it was beautiful area, beautiful weather. Kind of reminds me of Panama a lot with the humidity. Before we get into our topics tonight and to the audience, we're going to talk about Trump's executive orders. We're going to talk about him taking away the not only security clearances from individuals, but security details. And then we're going to do our hot takes. But real quick, what do y'all think of this, what the media is trying to do to Elon Musk, which is obviously just, he was just making a little gesture from the heart that 10 zillion people have made that I sarcastically made fun of here in the opening. What are your thoughts, Jamie, on that?
You know, when I saw it live, and in my in that moment, I thought it was kind of a dorky nerd being a dorky nerd. And I have some friends of Jewish faith who disagree with me, and I respect their position and their background and how they see that differently. But, you know, I don't think it's any more complicated than a guy was excited. He wanted to thank the crowd and kind of did it in a weird way. Something that, you know, I don't think he thought of. Nobody's accused him of being a Nazi in the past. And so I just don't think that this is something, you know, they're going to try to do anything they can to be negative towards anybody attached to Donald Trump. And so this was just their first foray into that failure.
I agree. In fact, Annette, Benjamin Netanyahu came out, Israel's leader there, and defended Elon, saying Elon's always been a friend to Israel and actually has gone to Israel. What are your thoughts when you see this?
Yeah, I mean, Elon, has anyone ever listened to him on an interview? He's a super awkward guy. I think his brain is so far surpassing himself with his vocabulary. You know, you can see sometimes he's got to, like, catch up, or he hesitates in an interview. If you've ever watched him, I sometimes almost feel bad for his awkwardness. So when he sort of jumps around on stage, almost like a 12-year-old child. So I took it in that spirit, and I was surprised that people tried to, I think Trump has made it very clear he's a friend to Israel. And I think the people around him know that and feel the same. And so, and Elon is sort of in the inner circle. So there was like never any thinking from my point of view that there was something else, like, you know, that was some sort of subtle gesture. And anyway, honestly, that'd be a strange place to do it. I don't think he'd be that stupid. Do you know what I mean? Is that like some secret? Did he like click his heels at the same time? I didn't see that or anything like that. But but I agree with Jamie. There's a couple people that I really respect who, I guess, were a little bit perplexed by it and a little bit concerned about it. I didn't feel that at all in seeing it, and I saw it real time as well.
I got to be honest. Those people are idiots, and I don't say that with love, hate, or anything. It's like, you're a freaking idiot. It's like we've all done stupid things, you know, whether drunk, just said the wrong thing at the wrong and inappropriate time. It's just completely innocent. And for somebody to twist that would be horror to us. And they're trying to do that to him. So people who go, well, you know, William, this is how I take it. Well, no, you're an idiot if that's why you took it. It's like your mama didn't raise you right, you know, because you're willing to condemn a man over something that had nothing to do, and you're trying to intellectually put it on as a discussion. There is no discussion point. It's the media trying to destroy him any possible way. And thank God for X, because let's be honest, without X being the town hall, they may have gotten away with it. You know, that's how strong the media is, and it's incredible how within a matter of a couple years they've lost so much power in being able to lie. The media bugs me. And to the audience out there, it bugs me because the media is supposed to be our warrior. You know, the pen is mightier than the sword. But instead, all they've become is an ideological extension of the Democrat Party. So let's get down to it. There's a new sheriff in town, new executive orders, and Trump's executive orders put America first. Not donors, not illegals, nor special interests. So let's talk about some of these. First of all, to the audience, Trump withdrew from the Paris Climate Accord, was one international entity, as well as the World Health Organization. These are two entities that cost us, the Paris Climate could have cost us supposedly up to $1 trillion per year, though that estimate is debated, and I agree it should be debated. But the point is, some ungodly money. And the World Health Organization costs us about $500 million annually in contributions. And the key issues with both of these is they dictate to the United States what our policy will be. They take away from us our sovereign right to decide what is the best course of action for our nation. Mr. Miller, your thoughts on withdrawing from these two international agreements?
You hit the nail on the head. That's what it's all about, is reducing American sovereignty. And the secondary issue is simply this is a way to extort Americans' money. And so especially the Paris Climate Accord, you know, it clearly defines in the Paris Climate Accord that, you know, developed countries will help and financially specific. It says it right there. Help financially underdeveloped countries. And they have to do this through technology. And then we don't even get to decide, number one, which countries we're going to help, how we're going to help them, or how much it's going to cost. So that's all determined by the groupthink of the Paris Climate Accord Treaty and its partners. So this is a horrible agreement to begin with. It was never ratified by the United States Senate. It was only entered through by executive order. And we should have been removed from executive order. We should not be able to join international treaties without Senate confirmation, period, the end. And that's the, you know, I think that's constitutional, and you know, we just need to get back to that.
And in fact, Jamie, to take it a step further, is correct. When this first came out, that was the deal. Hey, unless it's ratified, it's not even considered. But because of the racism, if you disagree with Obama, you were racist. And he used that to get us on board with this. And now it's become, you know, depending what regime is in, we're going to be in it or not in it. And I think that we've seen the end of this. But what are your thoughts? Jamie talked about the Paris Climate Agreement, but what are your thoughts about the WHO? Because the WHO had a very powerful hand in dictating to us a lot when it came to COVID.
First of all, I'm so relieved. And one of the things I wanted to say, I was thinking about this show tonight, and I was thinking, I wish we could call it, like, when we're talking about all these executive orders, like, evening the score. Like, I feel like that should be, like, the title of the show. You know, we're getting back to some sort of common sense and sanity, a day of reckoning, call it what you will, and maybe now we're going to sort of, like, turn the page and start over. I do care a lot about healthcare, and I was very involved with the Hastings Center and what they're doing with biology and cloning and all kinds of things that are happening and being on the cutting edge of some of that stuff. This was a joke. I just think the policies like that, they have promoted a lot of policies that I think have truly been dangerous. And I would say, like, even a form of eugenics, and I would say that dangerous for children and questionable in terms of their, like, efficacy, you know? So I'm happy about that. I think we need to sort of rethink some of these things. I'm not sure you can have, like, a global kind of healthcare. I don't even know how that gets, you know, accomplished. Just in saying that, William, I will say there are some healthcare, there are some things we need to look at globally in terms of, like, in terms of global health. And so, right, there are things that really happen that are pandemics. This last thing with COVID, there are a lot more questions than answers. And obviously, we know that there was a lot of lies. We're going to talk more about that with Fauci. But, I'm glad to see this dismantled. Just so glad we're not a part of it any longer.
This was, I believe, and I'm not a conspiracy theorist, and everything said in the past that has been considered conspiracy has come true. So this is about control. This is about the powers, and I don't know who those powers are, but there's a segment of society, the world globalists, that do want a global economy. And there's many good things that can come about as technology increases. We expand out into exploration of space, but that's generations and generations down the road where we'll have to unite as a world in certain instances, I believe. You know, as our technology grows, but for now, I think this was something to do more with control. Because you're right, Annette, go back to the medieval times and the Black Plague, for example, you know, a global solution or a global enactment would have been great then, you know. But I think it was good to get out of both of these agreements because I believe we must control our destiny, not the billionaires of the world, not the billionaire corporations of the world. America must control its destination, or its destiny, rather. So,
can I just say, that's why one thing really quick, William, about both of these things, I mean, he pulled out of them because he knows that they're no good. But that doesn't mean we can't rethink them or maybe potentially restructure them. Jamie, I don't know what you think about that. Or do you think that it's like we're throwing it all out completely? It's a bad idea.
You know, I think part of it is, you know, the pendulum swings, right? And so the pendulum swung so far the other way that to get people's attention, to get the attention of the world, that you have to kind of remove completely from it. And so I think that's what Donald Trump has done. And, you know, and the pendulum may swing back, but I think to really make the point as he starts his first week, we're just ending the first week. And so we haven't, you know, and so it's an incredible amount of things that have happened in, you know, the 4 or 5 days that he's been president. So he's, I think he was right to remove us completely.
Correct. I agree in that sense. Let's move on here to national energy policy. So President Trump, through executive order, declared a national energy emergency. And what this does to the audience out there, it allows him or the government to bypass the environmental regulations. And we here in California, I don't know how it is with you out there in Florida, Jamie, environmental regulations is one reason we had the LA fires in terms of how devastating they were. And this allows them to bypass that. It allows us to increase our domestic energy production. And there are certain impacts on this for we Americans. More domestic energy will lower prices by increasing supply. Now, we also have to refill our emergency coffers, but that's a balancing act. So I think the way Trump could do it won't impact us at all. But most importantly, Jamie, and I'll go to you first here, is I think you have hidden costs. And the easiest hidden cost to explain to our to most Americans is transportation costs. If gas prices go down, that includes diesel, that means the transportation of goods across the country will be lesser cost, and that means lesser price on our products and services we purchase out there. Thoughts on that?
William, I've had one conversation with Donald Trump in 2015, and this was a topic that we discussed in the 30 minutes I had with him, and I even made him laugh when I said, you know, Mr. Trump, he was Mr. Trump at the time, I'm just a blue collar economist. And he started laughing. He's like, well, I haven't heard that before. What's a blue collar economist? I was like, if you have cheap gas, you have cheap food. If you have cheap food, you have happy people. And, you know, and it's, I don't want to say it's more it's no more complicated than that, but it is quite that simple. That, you know, we have a huge number of people in America, when the price of gasoline goes down, they get a pay raise. So they can then interject more money into the economy, whether that's buying cheaper food, whether that's being able to get, you know, their housing, whatever. Everything becomes cheaper. Just like you said, the 2x4 you need to build your house is cheaper. Or concrete block, depending on what you're building. And so it's a matter of, all of it has to do with energy. And, you know, Joe Biden lost sight of that, or he never knew it or never understood it. I don't believe he ever understood the American people. I think he got so insulated in Washington, D.C. over 40 years that he had no idea. You know, even if he was cognizant that day, he didn't know what the American people knew or wanted. And he certainly made major mistakes with energy policy, which Donald Trump rightfully reversed this week.
I'm not chuckling at you. It's we're getting comments in for the, and we don't get a lot of comments here, so I apologize.
Wait, what are they? Bad comments?
We have our libertarian friend here, Mr. Hody Johns, is, I'm old enough to remember when conservatives promoted trade globalization and economic freedom and peace through tax reduction and tariff elimination. My hairline misses those days. Well, I think part of the problem here is people.
Well, and Hody, we miss your hairline.
I think part of the problem is we look at things too much in a global impact, or I'm sorry, on a economically, on an economy to scale, when something can be done surgically, you know, and tariffs can be done surgically. I've got a whole topic on that to debate in terms of why surgical tariffs are good, how they do bring jobs, how they help keep industries from being destroyed by outside countries that come in and purposely use our laws to flood the market to purposely put companies out of business. You know, and I look at steel. I think the best analogy to give to people is Walmart. Walmart used to go into smaller communities where the mom and pop shops were. They used to lower their prices where they would lose money on their prices to drive the mom and pop shops out of business. And then Walmart would be the only company standing. And that's how I look at a tariff. But there is a downside. Everything can be abused. You know, so we do have.
William, I mean, And hi, Hody. I think it's nice that Hody's listening. That's awesome. But William, let me just say to you, because I grew up in a town on the south side of Chicago, when Walmart came in, and then we had like a little street, Ridge Road, that we had all those mom and pop shops, and a lot of them closed down, or a few of them closed down. I found that to be depressing. What are you saying? Are you saying that that's not depressing?
No, I'm saying that that's the bad, that's how China uses our laws to come in, and those who advocate for free market say, well, what's wrong with that? Well, they're flooding the market to put our American businesses at a competition, and that means they close shop and Americans lose job. China did that, and it still does that with solar panels, for example. And my analogy was how Walmart used to do that. They'd go in there and force mom-and-pop shops to go bankrupt. And that's not bad. And that's where tariffs can come in as a weapon, because there is no free market. You know, that's a big myth. The strongest can control how things are played out, but we're a nice nation. So, for example, as a child, I remember when I first learned about Japan that they wouldn't let American cars in. My first thought as a child, I was like 8, 9. I was like, well, that's not fair. I mean, even as a child, I got that concept. But then as I got older, I kind of understood it. Well, if we flooded the market with American cars in Japan, a smaller country, I started to understand why they kind of held things in check. And we need to do that as well. And Hody does a follow-up. As a libertarian, I'm also glad to see us out of who. And for those of you guys not watching, or watching rather, take a look at the Big For All, Big John show, where Hody was looking mighty sharp last night in a nice suit there. So thank you for the comments, Hody. And Hody was a GOP strategist out of Colorado almost 2 decades ago, and I totally remember the tariff talking points being from the left. Just noting how this has changed hands is all. And you know what? Everything's cyclical. Jamie, you've been around since the 1800s, I believe. You've seen this.
I read my first campaign was James Garfield's front porch campaign of 1880s. Thank you for reminding the listeners of my centuries of service to our country.
Okay, so let's get back on topic here. We just wanted to say hello to those watching the show. But Annette, yes. What Trump also wants to do is make natural gas worldwide from us, from America. He wants to make us energy independent. Right. And he wants to reduce OPEC's leverage. I guess my thought process or my question is, how is any of that bad? To me, this seems to be something that all Americans should want, but the media and the left don't seem to like lower gas prices.
I mean, from what I was reading about this week, I didn't even realize this, that there was a big part of Alaska that Biden said we could not touch, and Trump has said, That's back in play. So I'm excited about the energy independence. I don't see how that could be a bad thing.
I agree. So in essence, what Trump is going to do is really just get our gas prices down. And in fact, for the audience,
they've already been going down. Have you paid attention to the prices of crude oil this week? They're going down already.
You know, a lot of things are happening. It's the Trump effect, and it's a global impact. And we're going to talk about it in the hot takes. But, you know, there's some interesting takes on Trump. It's like a complete 180 from when he assumed power in 2016. And I'm talking about it's a 180 by the power players out there, you know, whether it's tech media or whatnot. And there's an interesting comment that was said by the individual who began Politico. We're going to talk about it in hot takes. So let's move on here to immigration and border security. This one's a big one. The first one that I want to hit on this is the legal challenges to the citizen clause of the 14th Amendment. Well, he signed orders to curb immigration, including ending birthright citizenship, and everybody knew that's going to face legal challenges, and it's an uphill battle. But there are legal analysts out there, just as many as there are that say it's embedded in the Constitution, that people say, no, it's not. It's how you interpret it. I want to say the only country, but maybe if not the only country, maybe in single digits, like in less than 5, that actually allow like anchor babies. No country in the world that I know of allows anchor babies, meaning if you're born here, you're automatically a citizen. Jamie, what are your personal thoughts? Well, actually, I apologize. I shouldn't be asking that. What are your professional thoughts on the citizenship clause here?
Hey, listen, birthright citizenship is a farce. In fact, in the Supreme Court case that everybody cites of 1898, there's three categories for which a person is not a citizen. One is if you are a child of an ambassador. Two is if you are a subject of a foreign country. And three is if you are a child of a hostile occupying force. And so this is where I think Trump really has done something masterful, is when he sent the military to the southern border. And if you notice his language, he started, you know, even during the campaign, he called the 20 or so, 10 to 20 million illegal immigrants who came in the last 4 years an illegal occupying force. And so now he has sent the military to the southern border to protect our border. And now children of this hostile occupying force, which includes, as we know, they're being sent back. But as we know, they're gang leaders, they're criminals, they're sex traffickers, drug dealers. And so these are hostile to America, and they are an occupying force. They're not from a foreign military, but the U.S. Supreme Court doesn't say a foreign military. It says a hostile, that U.S. Supreme Court doesn't say a foreign military. It says a hostile occupying force. And so I question whether legally we're going to be able to go backwards and say that babies who were born here are not U.S. citizens because they've already had their citizenship kind of solidified because they've received it. They have social security numbers. But I think certainly Donald Trump is going to win the argument that these babies born here are not going to be U.S. citizens going forward.
Annette, people don't know this dirty little secret. And I read up on this some years ago. China, for example, will bring pregnant women here, set them up at a hotel, allow them to give birth, and there's their future.
No, William, I'm interrupting you because I was just going to give you something anecdotal. They didn't put him in a hotel. They put him next door to where I lived. There was a house next door.
Damn, they didn't get large.
No, I mean, no joke. I called the police, actually, because mattresses were coming in, pregnant people were coming in, babies were crying. Then they would leave, and new people would come. It all happened at night. Mattresses would be delivered to this place at night. People would arrive there at night. And I'm like, what is going on in this house? I mean, at first I was like, what's happening here? But that's what was happening. I called the police and I said, I think there's something really not right going on next door. There's a lot of people coming in and out and a lot of babies crying and they're pregnant and then they would leave. And they said that I needed to stay out of it is what they said.
Well, we're a great country. We allow a lot of things. Like I said, there's no other country in the world that allows this, and we shouldn't. Why? We have to protect ourselves as a nation. We can have compassion, but there should be rules because that's how you get destroyed from within. You know.
So Sun Tzu, which is the famous Chinese art of war, would say the best way to win is to subdue your enemy without fighting. And so to have Chinese nationals, Chinese nationals come to our country, have children, get automatically dual citizenship with every intention. This is important. Every intention is to fly those children back to communist China, raise them as communist Chinese, and then 20 years from now, have them come attend our colleges, infiltrate our society, and subdue us from within without fighting. This is ridiculous. No other country does it. And we must stop it.
Right. And I didn't bring that up because I couldn't remember if they would take the kids back home for that. So I didn't want to say it. But thank you for adding that in there because that is what they do. You gave me the confirmation. I read that article. It was many years ago, which shows they've been doing it for a while. You know, they're not dumb. Russia said the same, or the Soviet Union said you destroy a nation by indoctrinating their youth. You know, who would have ever thought our own American citizens would be doing that on the left? You know, so let's move on here to designated Mexican drug cartels and other organizations as foreign terrorists. So Annette, this gives the government a lot of legal grounds to prosecute. Most people think, oh, they're terrorists. Now we can send the military to get them. Maybe, but at the end of the day, it gives our government the power to prosecute them legally differently. And that includes asset freezing, travel restrictions, surveillance, and then again, the military side of it. What are your thoughts on this? I thought it was a long time coming.
Did you say that to help me, William? No, I think it's a good move, but I just also wanted to say, like, I thought it was interesting. I think the guy, Luigi Mangione, the one who killed the CEO, I believe they called him a domestic terrorist as well. And in this case, I feel like it makes a lot of sense. And then in that case, I wondered about it, and I wondered to myself, and then is that something that they're going to be using more frequently? How are they going to use this term and for whom, I guess? Again, in this case, it makes sense to me.
You know what, Annette, you bring up a good point, because it can be political at times. And what I mean by it can be political is that the Democrats wanted a push for the DOJ to label the J-6ers domestic terrorists, because that brings in the Patriot Act. And that means all hands are off in terms of following the normal way of law. They can do things that are not that
Americans.
Correct. Jamie, your thoughts on this?
I think it comes back also to the birthright citizenship issue, where you call them domestic terrorists. It creates a legal determination of a hostile occupying force. And so, of course, children of a hostile occupying force, there's no question. You look at the things that people are not debating about birthright citizenship, and there's no question that legal scholars agree that if you're a hostile occupying force, that your children are not U.S. citizens. Now, a lot of these things were not, the definitions were not created in that 1898 U.S. Supreme Court case. So you have to go into, case law and all this other stuff. And so some of these definitions have never been really defined in law. So I think there are reasons for Donald Trump to have passed all of this. And I do think they are connected. And I think you're going to see him win some legal cases.
I agree. Real quick, and then I apologize. I want to take a step back. It just hit me. What became of your neighbors then? Did it stop naturally, or what became of that?
Actually, the FBI got involved.
The feds. There you go. Okay. And then
I don't know, because we moved.
Okay. So you weren't able to see if they nicknamed you Gladys, huh?
No.
For those of us who were dating ourselves, I'll be with the show for the 60s.
Yes, Gladys, I know the word.
Was the nosy neighbor.
Which is an interesting little piece of trivia. Bewitched is the one TV show that was successful both in black and white and color.
That's right. Wrong podcast, but there's a whole backstory from the first day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we got Hody chimes in and says, as Trump said with this, now war with Mexico is on the table. Hody, I don't think so. There's just, it's like David versus Goliath. Nobody wants war. But I think, somebody needs to tell Mexico it's time to buckle up, and every time we put pressure, they comply, because they see they're in more of a lose-lose. And we don't want to put them in that position. But when you allow illegals to just come right on through and let them go in, it takes pressure like what Trump's doing to put them back in line. That's the one thing about the United States economically. We are a powerhouse, and at times we don't use that powerhouse ability. And in this case, there's a lot of things that we can do, and Mexico's already complying. Nobody wants to see war, and the Mexico understands they have a cartel problem. They have certain territories that are completely cartel dominated. About 4 or 5 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, I can't remember, one town had enough. And the people of that town, they just started killing. You were a part of the cartel or associate, they just killed you off. And they took control. And then when certain people asked the Mexican government to step in, they refuse to. They're cleaning up their town. It's like, we're not going to step into that. So we already talked about tariffs a little bit, but he's going to put tariffs on Canada and Mexico starting February 1st. New taxes will be added to goods from Canada and Mexico, potentially making items like cars or food more expensive. However, This could also protect U.S. industries by making foreign goods less competitive, possibly leading to more jobs in domestic manufacturing and giving the U.S. leverage in trade negotiations. Jamie, I believe it's the latter. He's using this to create leverage in trade negotiations or negotiations of those types. What are your thoughts?
Well, tariffs are playing the long game, and, you know, so we might have some short-term pain due to that, especially vegetables from Mexico, maybe wood from Canada that is imported here to the United States. So, you know, I'm going to trust the president on this one. There's certainly some inflationary pressures that can be caused by tariffs in the short term. And we know we're coming, you know, I still believe that we were either in or may still be in a recession that started in July. And so, you know, we're tap dancing on the head of a pin. So he may be moving a little fast on this one, but I'm going to trust his instincts because he's been right on so many of the others.
Right. And Hody responds back to us. I don't know. Did they pay for the wall? Doesn't it strike me as too compliant? I agree with you, I believe, and hope Trump's just lying to be tough on drugs. My issue is I never believed Mexico would pay for the wall. I thought it was one of the silliest comments Trump ever made in terms of, you know, how politicians make comments on the campaign trail. But here's what I will say about this past cycle. There's nothing on the campaign trail that Trump did not say that he has not done. Trump realized he had a lot of sway with see, Trump had gone through being president for 4 years already, so he knew what he could get away with on the campaign trail this go round. But you're right. I believe he fell into a trap of his own making by making that statement and the media running with it. It's one of those things you eye roll and go, why? Why did you say that, Trump? You know, real quick, your thoughts, Jamie and Annette, on Hody's comment there. Did he pay for the wall?
No, I agree. You know, I think the American electorate has done a good job of trying to determine the difference between Trump's, you know, election rhetoric versus, you know, what he's actually done. But like you said, so many of the things, you know, just today it came out that, you know, he spoke to Denmark about acquiring Greenland and he was adamant that we're going to acquire Greenland. You know, when a lot of people were kind of like, oh, this is, you know, the Greenland comment was kind of seen for a couple weeks, if not months, that was kind of Mexico's going to build the wall itself. And so, you know, now today we see that he is very adamant about trying to acquire that strategic piece of land in the Arctic.
I got to be honest. I thought that was kind of like just rhetoric, you know. Yeah. And you would think the left would be happy that we're going to add a new territory. That means more taxes, which is what the left loves. And obviously, I'm being sarcastic there. Any thoughts on this before we move on?
No, I'm just saying that sometimes I don't know. Like, I didn't know if he was just trying to set the tone or say, you know, hey, anything can happen right now. You know what I mean? Like, these are the kinds of things I'm thinking about. But I was thinking when it comes to some of these things, like I don't know, like, hold up on a little bit of it. Just from my point of view as someone who tries to be, I'm a diplomat. I realize that about myself. William, I'm a total diplomat, I think. I don't want to upset a bunch of people. He's coming into office. You know, he's got a lot of executive orders he's put out there. You know, like, I'm worried.
See, and then I kind of take a different tack. I push. And here's
Why
the thing.
You know,
well, here's the thing. If you hold back, let's say he gets 80% of it. And okay. If he pushes, he gets 95 and maybe 5% wrong. He still gets 90% good instead of 80. And so I think you have to push as far as you can. And I, like I've said on this podcast before, you know, people elected Donald Trump because he leads us through fire, and he leads us through fire despite the ones he sets. We know he's going to set some fires, but we also know that he's going to lead us through to the other side in to safety. So the mistakes that he makes, I'm willing to accept just because he has shown this ability to lead us through and either correct them or he's doing so many other good things that the mistakes are dwarfed.
You know, let me say this too. You know, I've never read Art of the Deal, never read it, don't plan on reading it. But we all practice the Art of the Deal. When I used to do negotiations for my previous company, there was like you ask for more than what you're going to get. you know, so you could, so it kind of, if you ask for what you really want, you're going to come out on the losing end, because that's not where you always end up with a compromise. And that's, maybe that's what he's doing. I'm a little bit with the net. I thought the Greenland and the Panama Canal, and I'm going to do a clip as a Panamanian. I actually have read and studied that treaty in depth, and we do have the right to do what he's saying. I just didn't think there would be a president that would have the backbone to even talk about it, because as Hody said, that's the equivalent of, hey, war's on the table, you know? But there is a big Chinese influence, and I'm going to talk about that in a separate clip. But I'm with Annette, though. I don't want him to say things that are way out there. And I got to be honest, I thought the Greenland thing was way out there. So, Jamie, that's kind of breaking news to me. I didn't realize he called the who is the president or minister?
I don't know who called whom. I just know that there was a conversation today. So,
All right. So let's get on to some of the parties. Now, we're not going to talk about it here, because this is a very heavy subject for me, and that's the J6 pardons. We are going to have an in-depth discussion. I hope to bring Jamie in on that one, and we'll probably do a separate clip on that. But real quick, I was okay with him doing the blanket pardons for this reason. The J6 committee lied. There's over 12,000 hours of film that disproves literally everything that the media and what the Democrats were saying, including the cop that died. And the J6 committee saw the video that showed the cop walking around when he was supposedly already dead. You know, so there's a lot of lies. And because we don't know the truth, ergo, we don't know, was there really violent people? We don't know. I'm okay with him doing the blanket pardon of 1,500 people. Jamie, your quick thoughts in the net, and then we're going to move on here to a couple of other.
I'm 100% supportive. I think at the end of the day, you're going to have the stories come out from January 6th, people who signed plea agreements and had to have a gag order as part of those plea agreements, who can now tell their story, where they were threatened. They had to agree that they committed crimes for which there was not even video evidence of. But they agreed to it because they sat them down and said, hey, do you want to do 15 years or do you want to do 15 months? And so people took the deal, 15 months, I'll get sentenced to 15 months out in 10. And a lot of people took that deal as I would have. And it was wrong for our federal government to treat its fellow citizens like that. And so I think as this was happening, I think we're also going to find out that in the Oval Office, as Donald Trump was trying to make this decision, I think he was going to not pardon those who committed violence. But then once he realized the details of people who could not use government video was used against them, but they were not allowed to use government video in their defense. And so, and things like that happened in many, many of these cases of the quote, 100 violent people who were pardoned. And so I think at the end of the day, he felt like they were over-prosecuted and didn't get due process and were lied to and about. And he has felt the brunt of that political lawfare and political persecutions and prosecutions. Right. And so I think he's like, these folks are like me, and I'm just going to pardon them all. And I think he was right.
Right. Annette, another reason I'm like, Y'all talking about protecting these cops. What about the cops that got killed or maimed during the BLM friendly Summer of Love riots? The billions in property destruction, American citizens murdered. Every one of those people, none of them were charged. And the ones that were put in prison, with Kamala's help, they created funds to get him out of prison. So I found the hypocrisy. That's what bothered me even more, is they were purposely persecuting a segment of Americans because they disagreed with them ideologically. Your thoughts before we move on.
That's right. I would just ask then to what you said, William, what about the lady who was killed? Was he prosecuted? Was that officer prosecuted for her murder, her death?
He was rewarded. He was lauded as a hero.
So that... Yeah, I mean, yep. I totally agree with everything you and Jamie said.
So we got a couple more comments here from Hody. I don't quite understand this one. I'll give that to you. He bragged about how hardcore he was on COVID, and he said it'll be no different against immigration. I'll be honest, I'm a big Trump supporter, but I thought he was a fool. And, I mean, up to a year ago, he's still demanding credit for COVID. I'm like, that was a disaster all the way across. But he needs to be tough on immigration. You know, I believe the philosophy of like an airplane, when they tell you, when those oxygen masks, put yours on first because if you don't, you may not be able to put it on your kids. We have to take care of Americans first. Then we can have the compassion to take care of others. Then Hody comes back and says, Joe Biden gave blanket pardons to people like Fauci and his son. So the left has lost its ability to call out Trump for breaking his promise and limited pardons. And Hody, I agree 100% there. When he gave him those blanket pardons on the final day, the final hours, I thought, Hody, you're right. Because the media has tried to make the J6 issue a bigger. And I think they made a little bit of headway, then it kind of fell flat when people started seeing all those pardons he gave the day he left office. So let's go real quick. I want to just gloss over these, get some quick comments. It's kind of like we'll be practicing for our hot takes. So what do you, Jamie, we'll start with you. What do you think of the RFK, JFK, and the MLK being released within 180 days?
Yes, I agree with it. So I will go back to the pardons for a second. I would say that if I'm Donald Trump, I give Joe Biden a pardon and make him either accept it or reject it, and then he can be a pardoned criminal for the rest of his life.
You know, I will say this, and then before we get to you, I was talking to my friend in North Carolina today. I called him up because I said, bro, they're going to let the MLK records get loose. I go, we're going to find out once for sure. It's going to be, was it the FBI smear job? Or did MLK like himself some Anglo women? You know, that's a big topic in my circles with my friends that we joke about. So to the audience out there, I'm not saying this is true or not. But, you know, when you kind of tag each other and he's like, yeah, bro. It's time to find out the truth. I won't tell you the language you use, but I hope anything that comes out from all of this actually gives people peace, gives the MLK family peace. And I also hope that we can learn from this. Because if this is government overreach, whether it was the MLK, the FBI, because the FBI should never have been spying on them from the get-go. They spied on him because they viewed him as an activist they didn't like or agree with. The JFK papers, who knows who was truly involved, you know? So a lot of things are going to come out of this, and despite my bad joke there, it's some serious issues. But more importantly, if bad things come out of this, I hope we can sit there. It's too late to hold people accountable, but I hope we can hold institutions accountable from doing this in the future. Your thoughts on that possibility, Annette?
Well, I think everyone's out there hypothesizing right now, you know, what might come out, what might be revealed. Yes, absolutely. I love how you said that you hope it gives some peace. I hope that it does as well. And I hope it does hold some institutions accountable. I feel like William and Jamie, if there was something really, a conspiracy of any sort, like revealing it, so I feel like maybe it's going to be a lot of nothing. What do you guys think? I feel like
I think, am I wrong?
Okay, you guys are naive over here.
No, I don't think it's anything to do with naivety. I think this is one of Trump's FU to the swamp, to the establishment, to the intelligence agencies. He's like, people want to know this.
What if it compromises people's faith in these institutions?
Oh, that ship sailed a while ago, I think. Jamie?
I think it's possible that we see that Russian influence has happened for decades and decades, including JFK, RFK, and MLK. And so I think that's one reason why it's been buried all these years, because I don't know if anybody either knew how to or was willing to admit that Russian influence has been such a dominant part of our politics for so long.
Okay, guys, but how do you think that we know for sure that whatever is going to be, you know, exposed is the truth? It's real. How do we know that?
These are papers. Well, you know what? You're right, I guess, because, so for example, I heard on another podcast within a few weeks, there was a part of JFK school when they went back, the commission needed more information or something to that effect. It was gone. So who knows what's been destroyed and what hasn't been destroyed? I mean, for all we know, it could be, you know, those Roswell aliens got, you know, they escaped and took JFK out, you know, who knows? But I think for somebody who's not involved, it's fun. It's a conspiracy theory. In fact, Cody sat there and said, the release of the RFK and JFK stuff is my favorite, EO. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people feel that way because it's a mystery that can finally be solved. I mean, the X-Files, these shows, there's always somebody with a theory. They made a movie with, I can't remember, the Franco, you know, going back, you know, so I think it's one of those type of things. But let's move on here to some social policies. He's ending DEI initiatives. He can only do it in federal agencies, but you're seeing corporations shedding their DEI policies left and right. And he's limiting recognition to two sexes. And today he came out and said, it's going to be out of sports as well. Annette.
Yay. No. There's a huge trickle down from this. This I absolutely can say, even at the school. You know, if Trump's conversations already, the things that he's saying and speaking out loud, you know, like you, how there's power in the word, what the pen is mightier than the sword. I think when you speak something too, there's power in that. It's trickling down even to the school level. For example, there was so much talk at our school and our little district about, you know, bathroom issues. Done.
Yes.
Gone. That conversation died. No one's even, nothing's percolating about any of that at all. It's just great. I'm sorry. But your question to me, I went on my own little tangent about the, yeah, you do, but you see that every, I think, but that's it, right? I mean, that's sort of what's happening everywhere. People are a lot less afraid now.
Right. And Jamie, I've been covering this on my other podcast, Points on the Board, the whole transgender battle at the college level, whether it's Leah Thomas. And I get angry because Leah Thomas, for the audience out there, has a schlong. It's still Will Thomas. And he was naked in that locker room. And I say it like that purposely, try to put a little humor, but it's serious. You know, it was like swinging it, you know, in front of those women. And any other time, that would be, you know, that's illegal, you know, but it was okay here. So to see Trump getting that out, affirming two genders only, getting, and DEI is racism. It is flat out racism and against the law. So the fact that we allowed it to get this far, 10 years ago, if somebody had brought up a DEI, you'd go, what? No moron's going to do that. And yet they did. Your thoughts?
The corporate media forgot that Kamala Harris was a DEI hire in the first place. And I think they misplayed the entire election and how much Americans were rejecting DEI. And of course they rejected Kamala Harris as, you know, her number one talking point about why she was qualified was that she had served as vice president. But she never proved that she was, you know, qualified to be vice president other than, and Joe Biden did that to her. But when he said, hey, I've only got four black women on my short list for vice president because I'm going to nominate a black woman for vice president. Mm-hmm. So he created this DEI situation that Kamala Harris just couldn't overcome during the election. And then, of course, Americans rejected DEI. They rejected Joe Biden's DEI hire for vice president, the second most powerful position in the land. And, you know, and people were just like, we've had enough. We've had enough of, you know, boys and girls sports, men in women's prisons, boys and girls bathrooms, you know, tampons in boys' bathrooms. Like, this is all, when you think about just common sense, people are like, people maybe don't agree with Trump, right? And that's kind of the Achilles heel maybe for Trump moving forward. They may disagree with Trump. They may not like his tactics. But they're like, listen, we have got to bring some common sense back to this. You know, whether it's citizenship, whether it's DEI, whether it's drug cartels, whether it's protecting our neighborhoods, all of it, you know,
you're right. In fact, my friend who I talked to on the phone in a different conversation, he told me, he goes, the thing about the Supreme Court woman, Kenyatta, what was it, Brown, I can't remember. Kenyatta Brown and Kamala Harris, he himself said, it makes us all blacks look bad because now everybody's going to look at that and think they weren't qualified. Mm-hmm. And they were given a job. He goes, and that's what makes us all look bad. And my friend's very highly educated, has a great job in the defense industry, has worked hard to achieve his success. So I can actually feel, not his pain, but his, not anger or pain, but his frustration at how those two decisions, supposedly helping, actually hurt, because perception is reality to most people. You know, real quick.
To Jamie's point, it put so many of us into conversations that were just insane, you know, and you could not believe you even had to enter into a conversation that was absolutely upside down. And it was, there was no, like he said, there was no common sense in it. And now it's all of that is gone.
Well, and they had the whole, you know, moral, they felt like they had moral authority over other people because they had thought these things. And it's like, you don't have moral, number one, you don't have moral authority over other people, period. But then you certainly don't have moral authority just because you want boys to go into girls' bathrooms. Like, they would start the conversation with, if you disagree with this, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
And Americans said, enough is enough. Well, you know, we're going to apply some common sense to this.
There's no principle behind it either, though. They have no principles behind the things that they think that they're backing out of compassion. They're really, that's why it doesn't go, no, that's why it can't sustain
itself. It's not that. It's, I'm laughing at the thought. As both of you are talking, I'm thinking all the tampons and the boys, it's like, how many of those tampons were actually used, you know? It's like it was just all for show. It was just for show. Okay.
No, they were drawn upon with red markers and stuck to the ceilings. That's what was happening in the boys' bathroom at our school, and I bet it was happening everywhere.
Okay, well, before we move on, one quick question. Give me your quick thoughts. Do any of you believe transgender people exist? Honest question. I'll start. Yes, they do.
Yeah.
But the statistically, it's not a significant number. But it's become a multi-million dollar industry and parents convincing their kids who and what they are and doctors jumping on that bandwagon to create irreversible surgeries that these kids, when they want to detransition, are told, no, you cannot have babies. No, you cannot get a woman pregnant. No, you're sterile now. You know. So I think there are, because I have met a person who I believe is a true transgender. They were born with female parts inside them. They're just messed up, you know. And they went through the process. And the person, the man, is now a woman. And I believe in this case, it's one of the very few out there. But we've tried to normalize this, and we've inflated these numbers for profit, you know. Jamie, you're taking Annette, your take. Then we're going to move on to our hot takes.
Yeah, I agree. You know, this very, very small percentage, and I'm not trying to take away from those who listen. Adults can be adults. They can decide what they want to do with their body. You know, when you start trying to make this into public policy, where children can mutilate themselves or mutilate their parents, can encourage their children to mutilate themselves forever, then, you know, that's some place where we have to step in. You know, the fact that somebody could hit the button other on their passport, I don't even know how other countries allow people who couldn't determine their gender into their country using a United States passport. So,
well, it's not only that, Jamie, you can commit a crime. You know, your ID is one thing, and you commit the crime is another thing. You know, so it's tough. Annette, your response, and then we're going to go to hot takes.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I have a really big heart for human beings and the things that they go through. So, of course, I believe that transgender people exist. I just also think it is very rare. And don't they call it gender dysphoria? Isn't that also part of it? There are the people who have what you described, the biological anomaly, William. There's that. And there's also people, I think, who have, like, the gender dysphoria. But again, they tried to use that. They tried to market it. They tried to create confusion.
I call it a lot of it. What we're seeing right now is, you know, exactly what you're saying, a gender fad, you know, and people are going to wake up at the other end of the fad. They're like, you know, when Nikes were the fad, you could change your shoes 5 years later, you know,
right.
You know, you can't change your gender back 5 years later.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are going to be, you know, and we don't know the long-term effects of some of these drugs. We're going to have some.
Exactly.
There's just.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, no, Jamie, you're right. I agree with you. And real quick, Hody says, by Trump's order, Amin Khalif is female. He is female by birth with the XY chromosome. It's just he's one of those few that There's your anomaly there. And I don't say anomaly in a negative way as much as the number is so low that it doesn't really register. And as Jamie said, we're turning it into a fad. All right.
Isn't XY male and XX female?
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know. I
always get chromosomes, right?
Damn it. All right, we're going to go straight into hot takes. We're going to talk about the security clearances and the security details. And again, one of the things we're going to start doing with Fired Up is creating more clips throughout the week because there's so much information. And I'm going to tag Annette G, who is not here tonight, and Jamie to help do these clips. So you're not going to miss out, people. Just make sure, which I didn't say at the beginning, you subscribe and follow Grumblings Media. You'll have access to all of that. So let's bring Big John on here. And let's get our fired up hot takes going. Big John, say hello to the audience.
All right, Big John.
Hello, audience. And I have to say real quick, William, I was afraid you were going to have to make me draw on my biology degree and my genetics degree. I was just about to correct you on your chromosome designations there until Annette stepped in. So.
I went to communications. I failed science. So I barely know my ABCs.
As a former liberal, stop triggering me. All right, let's get the hot takes. So hot takes for the audience is our lightning round. I ask the question, I get a yes or no, and then they'll explain why with just a 1 to 2 short sentences, quick sentences. To the audience, we are practicing to get very efficient at this. We are our own worst enemy. It's like the blob. Once one person gets captured with the long answer, the blob gets the next person with the long answer. And next thing you know, it's 20 minutes later. So let's keep going. Question one. Let's start with Annette.
Okay.
Should Trump have terminated Anthony Fauci's security detail?
Yes, absolutely. I can't believe how much money was spent on it. He absolutely shouldn't have that. He has plenty of money to pay for it himself if he needs it.
Big John.
This is a tough one because on principle, I'd say no.
Right.
But based on the fact that MAGA has vilified Fauci to such a degree, I would have reviewed it on a more detailed level.
Jamie.
$15 million a year of wasted money was saved by Donald Trump by canceling his detail.
I say yes, only because he's no longer in government service and he's a multimillionaire. And the average American, and I always think of the woman who has the order against her husband who doesn't get protection. All right. Number two, should the government arrest school officials who didn't let ICE enter the school? Jamie.
Yes, they arrested school officials to desegregate the schools, and school officials should have to listen to this federal order and comply and should be arrested if they don't.
Damn, Jamie going back to the past with some heavy firepower there with that answer. John.
No, not at all. This is a disgusting thing. It makes me ashamed to be an American, and I disagree with that. You know, people are people. They're not pawns for government. So unless they've committed a crime and it's been adjudicated in the court of law that they committed a crime, let them stay in the schools. Like, if you want to talk about getting rid of public schooling, I'm with you. But deporting them, horrible, horrible.
They weren't for the students. It wasn't for students. It was for the people who work in the school.
Were they criminals?
Yes, they are. They're here illegally.
Annette, that's the semantics answer.
They are here illegally by law. There is no semantics. It's by law. That's what I don't like about people. That's semantics. It's not semantics. It's the law. Annette.
John just came in. It's a hostile occupying force.
I don't like it, but it's the law.
My take is yes and no. If they can do it without going to the school during school hours, do it then. But if they have no other choice, do it when they have to because it is the law. Should Trump put conditions on aid to California? Big John.
Should he? No. Will
Annette.
He? Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he will. He already said he would. Annette.
He should.
No, I don't think so. I agree with John on this one.
Jamie.
Of course he should. California has failed its people in so many ways, including the fires, including illegal immigration. I think he should tie the aid to all of it.
Wait, but then hurt all of us? then all
All they have to do is comply with the aid. So here's my take. He shouldn't on a moral principle, but he must because Democrats never let a tragedy go to waste, and that's why we're in this mess. So he needs to tie this conditions to it so California can start getting out of the cesspool it's in. Should Trump eliminate FEMA? We're going to go with Big John here.
Oh, yeah, it's a government agency. Absolutely.
Jamie.
Yeah, I think this is a double-edged sword because, you know, what the dirty secret about FEMA is it's the one organization that can come in and create martial law when, you know, whether there's disasters or whether it's riots or whether it's whatever. And so, you know, quite frankly, it's taking a tool out of the toolbox for the federal government. It's not a tool that I like that the federal government has. And so it would be a longer debate.
Annette.
Yeah, I think it's totally dysfunctional.
I agree. I think it's good on paper, but government's too big a bureaucracy and they always fail. And because of that, FEMA has to go. And the North Carolina situation when they went political shows how corrupt it's become. Annette, Trump has shut down foreign aid to Ukraine pending a review. Should that foreign aid shut down to Ukraine be permanent?
Gosh, this is a hard one. Hold on, William.
What I mean is the war dollars. The war dollars.
You mean all of it? No war dollars go to Ukraine.
War dollars. Just the war dollars I'm talking about.
I'm sorry. Wait a minute. I think he should shut it down and he should review it. But I don't think that means
it's what he's doing. That's what he's doing right now.
It's got to be reassessed.
Jamie.
Yeah, I don't know that the Ukraine money for war the freeze on it will remain permanent. But I think Trump will put his own stamp on it. And I think during this review process, he's going to try to negotiate, just like he said, the end of the war. People have criticized him for not ending the war on day one, like he said. But we have seen that Biden has screwed things up so much that the Ukraine war will have to wait till next week.
Big job.
Yeah, I mean, look, anything that brings war to an end, I'm for. So if he can actually do it, sure.
I agree. I think he should stop it, make it permanent. This war would have ended had the United States done that a couple years ago, and there was a peace agreement in place, but the military-industrial defense complex did not want it to end, and they kept funding them. Should all foreign aid to all countries not align with America's interests? And I will start with this. Yes, nothing is given for free. There's always something attached to it, and we should not be aiding our enemies. Annette, your thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree. We shouldn't be aiding our enemies. Yep.
Big John.
Yes, I agree with you.
I agree as well.
All right. God, that's a first-time consensus, I think, so far. Okay, should the U.S.
Fast.
Okay, here's a tough one. Should the U.S. deport foreign students who support terrorist groups and death to America? Jamie.
100%.
Big John.
Define support in your question.
No, support. Deport.
They support.
No, you said support. Right. Like,
listen, people from foreign countries do not have constitutional rights.
No.
You do not have the right to. You don't have the right to march down our streets. You don't have the right to.
I understand that, but I'm trying to understand.
It's all going. No, John. I'm talking about is support. They're on college campuses.
You're saying ideological support.
Yeah, they're
not
coming
not financial support. Not like anything like that. You're just saying like the kids march in support of.
You're on scholarships and things like that as well.
No, but I mean, you're talking about like the kids marching for Hamas, for example.
Well, that's one. Yeah, that's one example. Yes.
Like that type of thing.
It's a tough one. I know.
I would say no. My instinct is to say no. Jamie's points notwithstanding, because I agree with him. But I'll say no.
Okay. Has everybody answered that one? I think they have. Okay.
I think Annette has to go.
No, I agree with Jamie. Wait, but William, you don't realize what you said. You said, should the U.S. deport foreign students? Deport.
Right.
So
right.
I say yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. That's what I say. We're not imprisoning them. We're like, if you don't agree with our philosophy or our way of life, why are we footing your bill to come here? You know? Should Trump have removed the security clearances of the 51 Intel officers who lied about the Hunter Biden laptop? I will answer this one first. Yes, but not because they lied about the Hunter Biden laptop. Once you leave government service, these people should not have it. I, as a military person, once I left the military, I lost my clearance. Nobody should have special treatment, especially when they financially gain off it and possibly expose our secrets to America that shouldn't be. Annette.
I like the way you're looking at that because I think that's very fair. I agree with you.
Big John.
Yes, and I'll agree with you word for word on that.
Jamie.
I agree. Well said.
I am the man. All right. Should Trump have pardoned Ross Ulbricht, the Silk Road founder? And hold on. Before I go to the other two, John, let's do a little quick pause. Give us a 30-second education on who Ross Ulbricht is. This is a big libertarian.
Ross Ulbricht was basically someone who in 2013, I think, or 2012, basically he was the creator of a website called the Silk Road. The Silk Road was, think of it as a libertarian free market eBay. You could go on there and you could trade for services, including drugs, I'm not 100% sure, maybe weaponry. And most of the transactions were conducted in Bitcoin. So when he was convicted of essentially of drug charges. No violent offenses he was convicted of. But in a weird move, the judge, as part of the sentencing, considered allegations the government made that were never filed as charges. And those allegations were that he hired a contract killer, which, again, was never proven. It was one of those things. And the government knew there was no case, so they never filed charges against him on that. They just, they brought it up. It was like one of those Law and Order TV shows. He was like, I think this guy's a wife beater. Do you have any proof? Withdrawn, but they say it just long enough for the judge and the jury to hear, right? So he got double life plus 40 years. So after he died twice, he was still in there for 40 years, right? And this was an outrageous miscarriage of justice. Yeah.
All right. So, John, obviously we know where your answer is going. Should he have been pardoned by President Trump?
He should have been pardoned the first time Trump was in office, and he should have never been convicted to begin with. But, yes, he should. Yes.
Jamie.
Were they his drugs? Like, what's the like?
No, he built the website. That was
it. The website. It was the very first website built where you could do transactions like that that weren't of the norm, for lack of a better.
In Bitcoin, by the way, which at the time the government had zero control over.
And that's what pissed them off. They did not have control.
They didn't have control. That's why. I agree.
They seized all the Bitcoin that he had as a result of the website's profits. That today is worth several billion dollars. Back then, the total was about 180. Yeah. So that's the other thing. The government enriched itself in the billions with a B with that.
Jamie.
Yeah, I guess I'm fine with it. It's not something that I'm intimately familiar with. Yeah. And so, but if he wasn't the one committing the crimes, which it doesn't sound like he did, that I agree with John.
Annette.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't control it, so they didn't like it. It's like someone like creating a phone service, and because something bad, two people get on the phone and they decide to do a bad, something, then
it's like the CEO of Verizon getting arrested for two drug dealers using his cell phones. Yeah,
exactly. That's sort of like what it's like. So that's why, and I don't think that's right. So, yeah, I think
that was my take. They have caught illegalities on eBay. You don't see the CEO going to prison. This has actually many similarities, Jamie, to the J6ers and how unwarranted charges were thrown on them just to add crap to it. They wanted to make an example of Ross Ulbricht because the internet was still fairly new in the commerce. And at the end of the day, they did make an example of him wrongly. Trump was 8 years. This came 8 years too late. Should the Trump administration withdraw the ban on menthol cigarettes and flavored cigars? I'll answer first. My dad smoked cool menthols, back in the day because all his friends were black, and I never understood why. It's because in the black community, menthols is it. So they did it on the premise of protecting minorities. I thought this was taking free choice away, good or bad. So I agree with him withdrawing the ban. Jamie.
Yeah, I'm for adult consumers being able to choose fruit flavors, candy flavors, menthol flavors, whatever flavors they want.
John.
Agreed with you and Jamie.
Annette.
Totally.
Outstanding. All right, bonus question number one. Agree or disagree, Politico's global editor-in-chief, he's a serious player in politics, John Harris called Donald Trump the greatest American figure of his era. And John Harris is not like Trump. Jamie, agree or disagree?
He certainly has cast a long shadow that cannot be denied. I guess it depends on your definition of greatest and who you're comparing him to, but he certainly is going to and has changed America forever.
I assumed it was a political figure, but he may have been, it may be not, it may be more than that. Annette.
Jeez, sorry. What's an era? How long is an era? How long is an era? Seriously.
Well, a generation is 25 years. If you want to compare the two.
That's fine. If you don't know, you don't know. It's a fair answer.
I don't know if I could say that.
Big John.
I'm trying to balance my thoughts here. I will say yes if the condition is that he's the greatest in terms of the impact he's had, without defining whether that impact was good or bad. So I will say because I'm thinking it's been more than Reagan, certainly more. Maybe Obama comes close to him in terms of having the greatest impact as in the political realm. So sure, why not?
I think it's too early to tell, but I agree along with John. But here's what I will say. I was against him signing all these executive orders while he's out partying, and he made it work. He made it seem natural. He is a rock star early on, but I still think it's too early to tell. Final question of the night, my friends. And before I do that, John, an apology. I didn't realize how sensitive I was to the school question there. I jumped all over you. Sorry about that, brother. Okay. Should the Gulf of Mexico be renamed the Gulf of America? Jamie.
I live a stone's throw from the Gulf of America and proud of it.
Annette.
Oh, guys, no, I don't think so. No.
Big job.
No, of course not. It's freedom fries all over again. It's like,
honestly, I'm indifferent. But as a child, when I first came to America as a teenager, I mean, I was a citizen, but I first moved here, I just always wondered, why isn't it called the Gulf of America? Because of America's standing in the world. But I am indifferent. And there you have it.
I would just suggest that optics matter. And, you know, by changing the name, we're saying that we're going to protect that body of water, its natural resources. And, you know, so I think that while it may seem trivial, I think it goes deeper than that.
Oh, no, Jamie, I don't think it's trivial at all. That's my concern. I feel like we're almost picking a fight. And I don't.
I think here's the thing. We're not going to have to pick a fight with China, Cuba, and Russia in the Gulf of Mexico. They are going to come to us, and we might as well put a stake in the ground and claim it. And let them come to us and then let us defend it. But by renaming it, we are saying that, hey, we are claiming this and you can't have it.
I guess I could see that. I guess an activist would go to you, Jamie, and say, British Petroleum. And with that, my friends, we close out our show. Before we go, let's start with Big John. Tell us a little bit about your show and your new co-host on your other shows.
Yeah. So I'm picking up co-hosts left and right this year. So we're doing Liberty Lens. I record that with Mike Termott. It's released every Thursday. That's a short, maybe 25 minutes, half an hour. The hottest issue from a libertarian perspective. This week we covered the presidential pardons of both Biden and Trump. And then every Thursday nights, my co-host that just joined me 2 weeks ago, Hody Johns, he's been asking all the questions. And yes, he outdid us last night. Very dapper outfit that he came online with. So put us all to shame. And William, join in. As you know, I've had some guests on, Jake Porter, who has been instrumental in possibly getting the sitting chair of the Libertarian Party removed on charges and allegations of corruption and embezzlement. So lots of hot stuff if you're a libertarian in terms of the Libertarian Party, if that sort of thing floats your boat. So that's every Thursday night live free-for-all. Thank you.
Jamie, tell us a little bit about Reasonable Arguments. And Jamie's everywhere. I found him on some website with a bunch of different people out of Louisiana there.
Just some website. Come on, let's define that a little bit better.
I apologize. That came out crass. But
we have outlawed pornography in Florida, ladies and gentlemen. So not that type of website. But John, I would say that, you know, I feel like I'm very well fashioned tonight. I'm dressed like Judge Reinhold and doing my best impression of him this evening. But Reasonable Arguments, you can find me on Substack and also wherever me and my wife have a podcast, Reasonable Arguments, where news and nonsense. You probably would like my wife more than me, and because everybody does. And I kind of bring the news and she kind of questions it because she hates politics and, you know, sometimes doesn't understand it. So you get kind of my view as a long-term political professional and then kind of, you know, the man on the street or woman on the street view, because she's just like, I don't know what any of this means. So she asks a lot of questions and then she ends up with a lot of stories that are just kind of like the old Paul Harvey, you know, the rest of the story type of stories that people enjoy, and then she kind of surprises me with those. So the roles kind of reverse at the end, where I ask a lot of questions about these confusing stories that she sometimes finds on TikTok or wherever she finds them. So it's a fun podcast.
She can be very curt with you at times. Miss Annette, we know you have your book here, Where Fairy Tales Go, but you also were interviewed by Big John.
I was. I was actually going to say that. And it sounds like with your wife, that's like iron sharpening iron, Jamie, right? Like she refines you. I'm going to watch that. Yes, I wrote a book, and Big John interviewed me. Thank you so much for doing that and for taking your time and asking me great questions. And we had a really nice chat about a lot of interesting topics. So.
Outstanding. And there you have it, folks. Do not forget to like and share this podcast. And you can find this podcast as well as my Red, White, and Rude, which is politics and culture, and my Points on the Board, which is sports and culture. I am the man. You can find that at grumblingsmedia.com as well as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Pandora, and Spotify under the handle Grumblings Media. Until next week, my friends, I am William Del Pilar for Fired Up and the panel, and I bid you adieu.